You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, a weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske and Sam Gardner, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today, I'm talking with Paolo about subgroup analysis, a never-ending story and always something interesting to learn about, so stay tuned. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and we are actually talking about one of these today, and much, much more. Head over to the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to a new episode of the Effective Statistician. And today I'm talking with Paolo about one of my favorite topics, subgroups in combination with data visualization. Hi, Paolo. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me.
Very good. Subgroup analysis is a really important topic. It comes up again and again and again. You know, you want to understand subgroups for safety reasons. You want to understand subgroups for efficacy reasons. It's a common question in terms of how consistent your drug works across different subgroups, or whether there's a specific subgroup that stands out in terms of efficacy or safety. It gets even more complicated if you want to review it across multiple studies, for example. So within subgroups, yeah, I think data visualization plays a very, very important role. What's your experience regarding this, Paolo?
Yeah, I think that presenting some exploratory subgroup analysis with graphical displays is really, really important. I think it's always the case that you can deliver a better message if you use properly some graphical display. For example, 1 year ago, I was working with one of my colleagues in terms of doing some exploratory work for subgroups identification, because we had one study with unclear message at the end. And we wanted to have a fruitful discussion with the clinical team, have a nice tool, have an interactive way of discussing what we have in the data. And we presented an interactive application based on the subscreen package developed by people at Bayer, and it was really successful. Clinicians liked it because you can basically split the sample size in the subgroups you want. In every combination, you put all the subgroups in one display, final plot, and you can interact with it. You click on each dot, and you have a specific subgroup. Maybe it's subjects per male and with a certain age and with some disease duration at baseline, and you see how much the effect size deviates from the overall effect size.
Yeah. I really like this R-based tool as well, because it really supports the usual workflow that you have. Yeah. By looking into subgroups more and more closely, and also more and more complex subgroups. Yeah. You start maybe with subgroups that are just defined by one variable. Yeah, then you start into subgroups looking into, you know, that combination of two or three and more variables. With this plot, this funnel plot, you can really see kind of the relationship between the size of the subgroup and the effect within the subgroup. And the funnel plot, you can think of as, here's the horizontal line is the size of the group, and the vertical line is the effect within the group. Upwards, more effect, downwards, less effect. And so, of course, with smaller subgroups, you, by random chance, get more and less big effects. This funnel is really that, you know, the smaller the subgroups, the bigger the distribution, of course. But with a funnel, you can also see whether there's certain subgroups that don't follow just this kind of random pattern, but which really stand out. And these are the ones that you really want to look for, because these are the ones that where there's potentially really something happening.
Yeah, I really like the idea, because, for example, the developers didn't want to put confidence intervals or p-values in the tool, because it meant just for exploratory purpose. Mm. And I think that it's also an educational tool for clinicians. They can understand that if you cut the sample, you can, of course, have more chance to have larger deviations from the overall effect.
Yeah.
You can also find, you know, these subgroups that really deviates from this expected pattern.
Yeah.
And of course, clinicians are used to funnel plots. If you think about reporting biases in meta-analysis,
yeah,
they know that there is an expected pattern and some deviation from this expected pattern in the plot.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, this kind of combination of different subgroups is a really, really interesting topic. Yeah. So of course, we, you know, if you have just two variables that you look into, yeah, you can think of a Venn diagram, yeah, with the two areas and they overlap, then you get a nice description of it. But as soon as you have more than two, it gets really, really complex, yeah? And for that, you have in your presentation of your subgroup, in the subgroup webinar that recently happened and that was done by PSI on Wednesday of the 17th of November, you've shown a different plot. And to be honest, up to, you know, the point that someone mentioned it in a wonderful Wednesday webinar, I haven't known about this plot. So can you tell us a little bit more about this upset plot?
Yeah, it's a really nice device in which I discussed the basic upset plot, in which you have the intersection between groups and you have the sample size. For example, control, harm, and treatment in terms of the sample size in each arm. So you can see the amount of patients you have for each of these intersections. And of course, you can have an extended version of this plot, including the effect size. So maybe you have a forest plot in the middle, and then you have the intersection on the left side of the forest plot, and on the right side, you have the amount of patients you have in each arm. So you can have a comprehensive overview of what you have in terms of sites, in terms of number of people, in terms of uncertainty in your effect size for this specific subgroup. So the original version of the upset plot was only with intersection between having or not having this particular condition for the subgroup definition. And then you have also this extended version, considering also the case that for age, for example, you don't want to consider any split between older or younger than 65. Maybe you want to consider all the possible ages, and then you have a different combination of other characteristics.
Yeah.
But of course, it's difficult to scale, you know, this graphical display when 4, 5, 6, 10 covariates define subgroups.
Yeah, yeah. But there the ordering comes really nicely. Yeah, I think the as you order the subgroups there in terms of the size, you know, you don't need to show everything. You just kind of cut at a certain point, and any subgroups that are smaller than that, you just ignore. Yeah, which I think is quite reasonable, and that makes this upset plot quite manageable. I think it's a plot that everybody should be aware about because it's really nice and helpful, and yet very much underused. You touched on another interesting point, and that is the continuous covariates. And looking there into subgroups, that's, you know, the dichotomization or the categorization of your covariate is kind of a little bit tricky. Because, of course, we know that, you know, just because you turn 65, your biology doesn't dramatically change.
Yeah, of course.
You presented about the step approach to this. Can you tell a little bit about what that does?
It's a nice way, among others, I would say, to display how you can have different size effects along the continuum of a biomarker of different characteristics. And of course, you need to have some kind of smoothing in the sense that you need to adapt your analysis to the level of the covariate, trying to avoid, you know, this basic linear trend that doesn't maybe tell you all the story. So basically, you cut the sample size in different subgroups, which are neighboring. You started by, for example, you have 400 patients, and you start by considering 50 patients in each subgroup, and you start. And then you consider also the case that you can have an overlap between neighboring subgroups. You started from, for example, younger people with a median age of 45, and then you have another subgroup with the median age of 50, for example. Yep. And these two subgroups could overlap, for example, maximum 20 patients, for example. And you have the effect size for each of the subgroup. And of course, you have a confidence interval, which is basically calculated as always. And then you have also a simultaneous confidence interval, in the sense that you are taking into account that you are reusing the same data to some extent.
Yeah, yeah. So you get a really nice smoothing over the complete range of your covariate, and you then can very much easily see whether there's, for example, some kind of hockey-shaped curve, or whether there's some U-shaped curve, or, you know, any other relationship, and or whether it's really, you know, pretty stable, and some kind of linear regression really makes a lot of sense. I think that is a really nice graphical approach. The downside is, I think you need a decent number of patients to estimate these things, because otherwise you can't really, you know, smooth things out. So I think it's surely not a nice approach if you have just 20 patients. It's will not.
Yeah, work. And then you can see that if you have a smaller sample size, then you have in the end you produce your problem to fit a straight line, because you can't cut along the continuum. So
completely agree. There is the next problem that you talked about in your presentation is about exploring subgroups between studies. So what's the biggest problem there when you compare across different studies?
Yeah, for example, if we think about one study, we speak often about heterogeneous treatment effect, for example, in terms of when you have different studies, maybe you have different results.
Mm-hmm.
So what you can find in one study could not hold in the other one. And I've encountered these situations in which clinicians, for example, struggle to understand why you have different treatment effects in one study. And you, at some point, you may want to combine the evidence you have in your pool of studies and trying to figure out how much heterogeneous is your heterogeneous treatment effect in your studies.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have 5, 6, or 7 studies, as it can be the case if you have a clinical development program progressed a lot, and you have maybe also real-world evidence data, you have phase 4 studies and phase 2 studies in the same bucket, then you can do a three-step meta-analysis approach, basically. You fit the model, you find the subgroup, and then you combine the interactions,
mm-hmm,
and see the heterogeneity across studies of this interaction term.
Okay. So you basically first identify the subgroups, then within the studies you look into the interactional effect between treatment and the subgroup. You show that across the different studies using a forest plot. And in the third step, what's happening there?
Then there is one nice graphical device that has been used a few times in the meta-analysis literature, which is the Gauche plot. So basically, you can fit the meta-analysis step for all the combinations of the studies you had. For example, you can put together studies 1 and 2, 1, 2, and 3, all the studies from 1 to 7, for example, if you have 7 studies.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a bunch of this combinatorial
Yeah.
definition, and then you have this Gauche plot. So basically, it's a scatter plot in which you have the high square in the y-axis and the effect size in the x-axis. So you see how much heterogeneity you have for each combination, depending on the effect size. And of course, you can spot some pattern, for example, and you can have, for example, a Gaussian mixture model. You identify some cluster, and then you can see that one of the study is responsible for the creation of such clusters, and you can spot this study as the driver of the heterogeneity across your studies.
Yeah.
And then you can maybe have a closer look to this data.
Yep.
And see what was going on there.
So what you you're doing is you have this plot of the effect size versus the heterogeneity score. Here's the I square. And that gives you the scatter plot. And then on top of that, you build a unsupervised learning, the cluster analysis. And then you get to a number of clusters and you can understand kind of which studies are in these clusters, so to say, mostly represented. Okay.
Yeah, in the sense that, for example, you have three clusters identified, and maybe the proportion of each study is less or more equal in all these clusters. And then you have one study which is more present in one of the clusters, for example. And it's almost absent in the other cluster. So it's more unevenly distributed in this cluster. So it's like having covariates that vary a lot in the cluster analysis. For example, when you have a cluster, for example, with a high proportion of younger people and a low proportion of older people, and then if you think about customers, and then you can identify this cluster of customers like the young people who like this kind of stuff. And it's the same here. You have in this particular cluster where you have maybe a lot of heterogeneity and higher or lower effect size, so you have this study or these two studies more present.
Yeah, yeah. And you also talked about yet another nice application, an R-Shiny tool that was presented at a wonderful Wednesday in December 2020, and where you can much better kind of interact with the different data. That gives you this Gaussian plot compared to, combined with a forest plot. And it's really, really nice to explore then the heterogeneity within subgroups across, different studies. So lots of graphical stuff that we talked about here. And of course, we only talked about it. So I really urge you to have a look into our corresponding blog post, where you will find all the different links to these different graphics. There's R codes, there is, the link to the video on demand, where you can, look to the complete webinar, also with the other interesting discussions about subgroups, and code stuff like this. So I think it's a huge, nice thing to look into these things in a visual way, because it's so much faster than looking across many, many different tables, for example. So Paolo, what's your key takeaway base that you want the listener to step away with?
I can only echo you that I think that we have the opportunity to evolve a little bit with the technology we have. So it's really difficult to have a sense of what's going on just scrolling thousands of tables. And it's much more elegant and pleasant to look at one interactive application.
Yeah. I think that will be much more the future. And I think people get more used to these interactive data visualizations. Also now, as there's so many dashboards around the pandemic, why not use that within the companies? And maybe also for in the future at some point with regulators and other customers that we have. Thanks so much, Paolo. That was a great discussion. And again, you can check out our homepage where you will find all these different links. And stay tuned for much more in the future to hear from Paolo and myself.
Thanks, bye.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain, who helps with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.